adesso parte il tiro, rete, 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 un gol straordinario.
Welcome to Rate This Way, a Calcio podcast that brings you the latest and greatest news from the world of Serie A and European soccer. My name is Michael D'Angelo, and with us, as always, we have Paolo Nobiloni Mangoni.
Welcome back, everyone.
We've got Mr. Chris Pacelli.
Hello, everybody.
We've got Gigi Julian D'Angelo.
How's everybody doing tonight?
So creepy. Oh, God.
Apollo convinced me to play that song because, of course, the milkman is back. Boy. The milkman is back in Serie A.
And has two goals already.
Has two goals, that's right. Yes. Yeah, that's, of course, Milik, who scored twice this week. Twice in a week.
Yeah, twice in a week.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was about to say that this leads me into our obligatory arts and culture.
That's right. Yes, of course.
Start off the show. So that song is from a movie called Boccaccio 70 or Boccaccio 70. And it's an interesting movie from the early 60s where it's four acts all done by a different director. And they're all famous Italian directors from the early 60s. So you have Vittorio De Sica, Fellini, Monicelli, and the last one escapes me right now. But and you all have famous actresses from that time as well. So there's Sophia Loren, Anita Ekberg, Romany Schneider, and Romany Schneider, and there's another Italian actress as well. So and it's all this, like, each act is a Italian neo-realist special, put it that way. And for me, it's a great movie to understand that neo-realist post-World War Italy, that they all, it's like a futuristic element of what the early 60s thought what Italy in 1970 would be.
Oh god! Sure.
Yeah. So that's your post World War II neo Italian realism for this week.
Did you take a course on Italian films?
I did not. No, I watched them. I mean, that's the way we learned Italian. Remember, if we went to Italian school and we watched Italian films, and the ones that we all
who went
know
to Italian
here,
school here.
I think we all did.
Maybe
not Chris.
I went for 1 year, and then my parents said you have to pick between Italian school or soccer. So,
well, hey,
I was surprised they ever asked me what I wanted to do, but they were nice enough to ask. So, I think you guys know what I picked.
Chess.
Yes.
Playing 3D chess either. Right there. Huh?
Yeah. No, I didn't. I didn't take Italian school. I did Italian in university, but
well, that's technically Italian.
Yeah, but we didn't watch Boccaccio 70.
No, but we watched. I remember I watched Once Upon a Time in America in Italian because it was done by Sergio Leone.
I watched that in English.
Yeah.
Coming to America?
No, yeah. Coming to America?
Yeah. But no, but that's what I also grew up on, right? Like, you hear stories about watching Roberto Benigni and the movie Johnny Toothpick. That's another famous one that I remember growing up watching. Where it's just pretty much Roberto Benigni swearing in Italian, which is how I learned how to swear in Italian. So so yeah, that's the way I grew up watching old Italian movies.
Right. I just watch Rye sometimes.
Yeah.
Catch the game shows.
For me, the last thing before we move on, my favorite game show on that they do on Rai is Reazione Catena.
Which one's that?
That's the one where they have to link up the words in a chain. That's what it's called.
Chain reaction. Yes, yes, okay.
Yeah.
I personally like anything with Paulo Bonolis.
So that's like Mediaset though.
Maybe it's Mediaset. Okay. Well, either it's both Rai and Mediaset are in that package that.
Then have you seen the Chow Darwin?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
That's another hilarious show. Well, hilarious. I mean, it's pretty much just like scantily clad women just walk around for an hour and a half.
Yes.
Yeah.
Julian, you would like him because he's a fan of Inter. No, not because of the scantily clad women. But I could see how that maybe sounded like that's what I was saying. He also did, didn't he do the Deal or No Deal one?
No. I think that's Flavio Encina.
I think he did Paco X, which is a little bit different. And then I think Paulo Bonolis did the deal. Anyways, I'm sure there's a class on this.
Yeah. But he also did, the one that's on right now is called Avanti Un Altro.
Yes, Avanti Un Altro. Avanti Un Altro.
And so.
Oh, and who's that guy that he's with all the time?
Lucas
too?
Something. I can't remember his last name. It's Lucas Something.
He's funny.
Yeah. So.
Laurenti.
Yeah, that's him. I think he's the Juventus fan. He's the Inter fan, but I can't remember if that's true or not. But can't remember.
He's not. He's not big enough for Wikipedia to have a page on him. Maybe in the Italian version.
Well, obviously the Italian, yeah. But
Italiano.
But I don't know. So you're talking about how it will be like the one that I dislike the most is Amadeus.
Mm.
The guy who hosts Sanremo. I think I find that he's like extremely annoying.
Whoever does Ballando con le Stelle is also.
You don't like Milly Carlucci?
No.
No?
There's a couple of judges I don't like either, but I mean, it's the whole thing.
One of the
thing,
judges is Ivan Zazzaroni.
Yeah. Listen, the whole. Beyond that, maybe that's who I don't like, but beyond that, it's just that the whole production takes 4 hours.
I know.
And you know what? Not dissimilar to this podcast. Not dissimilar to this podcast at all. But we at least cut it for time, so people only hear 2 hours of it instead of the 4 hours that it takes. Yeah, the four or 5 hours it takes for us to record it. Anyways, let's move on. We have a lot to get through, too, so this is the worst. We're gonna be up until, tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Welcome to the show, everybody. We had obviously two match days happen this week. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through those guys quickly. And then we have some midweek soccer as well. But it's not Serie A, of course. It's going to be Champions League. So our Champions and Europa League and the Conference League. So
greatest competition on Earth.
It's right. Greatest competition on Earth. So we'll chat through all of those. That'll be in the second half. But first off, we'll start with... the matches that were so they were midweek on I think it was Tuesday. Sassuolo and Milan played to a 0-0 draw, so nothing really there. And immediately in our midweek matches, we had our the game that featured our goal of the week. But we had Inter winning 3-1 over Cremonese. Correa scores in the 12th before Barella has this beauty here goal. So let me just play that for you.
The priest with the ball in. It's whacking Correa. Tees up Çalhanoğlu. Hakan Çalhanoğlu. To Barella. Some goal that. Technical brilliance by Nicolò Barella. And Inter double their advantage. In quite some style.
So... Çalhanoğlu gets the ball on the left side of the box, then crosses into Barella, who's at the top of the box, and Barella volleys it into the far left corner for a beauty goal. Very, very nice goal. Can't deny that as much as I would like to. But it's that made it 2-0. Lautaro scored as well in the 76th to make it 3-0 before Okereke scored Cremonese's goal. And again, it ends 3-1. Roma also played Monza, and Dybala had his first two goals with his new squad here. So he scores in the 18th and 32nd minutes.
And his 100th goal as well.
His 100th goal in Serie A as well. Yes, correct. And Ibanez scores in the 61st minute to complete the scoring for Roma. So they win big midweek, but we'll see what happens at the end of the week. there were ups and there were downs. But let's move on to Wednesday. Empoli tied Verona 1-1. Baldanzi and Colon with the goals in that game. Sampdoria and Lazio tied 1-1 as well. Immobile scored and Gabbiadini in the 90th to snatch a point for Sampdoria. Udinese won 1-0 over Fiorentina. Beto scored that goal in that game. Juve won 2-0, and this is where the milkman comes back into play. Vlahovic actually scores a goal 9 minutes in. I believe you said it was a free kick. Is it this one? Yeah, it was a free kick. Yeah. The milkman scores in the 90th. For Juve, so he's back. Napoli and Lecce drew 1-1. Elmas in the 27th and Colombo in the 31st. So that was that game. And then moving on to Thursday quickly here, Atalanta were hosted Torino and Atalanta won 3-1. A Kuppenmeier's hat trick, but two were PKs, but nonetheless a hat trick of goals. Vlasic in the 77th for Torino was the consolation goal. Last game midweek was Bologna and Salernitana. A PK from Arnautovic was canceled out by Dia in the 88th. And there you have it. That's your match day 4. Paulo, any quick notes on the midweek games?
The Colombo goal was really nice. It was like turned on a dime and shot top corner. So again, that was an important point from Lecce. Also, Dia has been on a hot streak as well. Has been scoring a lot for Salernitana. But other than that, also in the Milan-Sassuolo game, Berardi got injured.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, let's move on to the weekend matches then. And I guess we'll get into more in depth, obviously, now. But this is obviously now match day 5. And it was a super Saturday. We had a fantastic run of games to open up this match day. And start off with Fiorentina-Juventus. Paulo, do you have any quick notes on this game?
Well, again, Milik got the goal again. The milkman scored to open the scoring, and then it all went downhill from there. Help me. I think so. I forget who scored the goal. Was it? Oh, yeah, that's right. It was the counterattack from.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah. Di Maria, the ball is, I think, it's off a corner. Actually, what happens is this the McKennie non-shot? Yeah,
exactly.
So he kind of crosses it in, and he just messes up a great chance. It goes out for a corner. UA try at the corner, and it actually just bounces, or effectively it gets cleared. Di Maria is just short of it, tries to extend his leg, and it bounces past him. And then Fiorentina go on the counterattack for Julian's favorite, Kwame.
Yeah. No, I just said I was happy for him because I know his career. He was always supposed to be promising, and then he tore his ACL, I think, 3 seasons ago. But he seems to kind of found his way under Italiano so far this year.
I tore my ACL about, 10 years ago. You never said any of that nice stuff to me.
Listen, I did as well, and my career has never been the same. I dropped from Men Direct 2 to Men Direct 4.
Oh.
So going back to the game and instead of talking about our ACLs.
Our arts and culture and ACL tears?
Yeah.
A and C? ACL.
It's tied 1-1. After that, there was a Fiorentina PK after Paredes handled the ball, deflected off his arm. Luckily for Juventus, Perrin tipped it onto the post. Jovic was the one that shot it. And then after that, Juventus didn't get a shot in the second half. There was, like, legit zero shots on target. And, again, Michael, we were talking last week. It was the same problem with after that game. I think it was who the hell they played?
My match. Not before Spezia, you're saying?
Yeah.
Sampdoria?
Yeah, that's
Roma.
Roma was before that. Yeah.
Roma was week three, yeah. And
either of those games, actually, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And how they didn't go for the win, you know, or tried to play. And there was a clip where Allegri in stoppage time in the 94th minute was yelling that it's done. I mean, to say that when you're not winning the game and you're tied against your presumptive rival is at best shameful, you know, and it goes to the question, you know, that I have is it's what's the point of starting Di Maria if you had to play him, if he's injured. And then just what's it say about Juventus's objective for the season? If you're not willing to play to win the game.
Yeah. And of note as well in this game specifically, not in the other games, but this game, Vlahović didn't see the pitch at all.
Yeah. So, and now that's going to go to for our talk about Champions League.
Yeah.
Yeah. So cause I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but
no, but that speaks to your point he's already making concessions in the league to apply elsewhere. Right.
Yeah. But the thing is again, I don't want to get into that. We'll touch on the, after the break, but the substitutions most likely about conceding, he took off it was when Di Maria came off, it was for DeCilio.
Yeah.
I mean, what does that say? Like, just that substitution itself is conceding the game to your opponent and not willing to go for the 3 points. I mean, those drop points are eventually going to come back and haunt you. I understand that Juventus has the best defensive record in the league and is still undefeated, but at some point, you're going to lose a game. I mean, this is not the team that Antonio Conte had when without playing in Europe. You got to play in Europe, and we already saw that turnover for the European competition. But the thing is that what's most disappointing is that this guy didn't is not giving it its all. It's too just strategic in terms of just playing for the draw and getting out of that game when he probably knew that his team should have lost.
Yeah. So let me tell you this. Let me guess what he's doing. I think that, and he, after the game as well, he boasted that they played exactly how he wanted them to play. They're prepared for the midweek, basically. So I think what he's trying to do is come up with some sort of tactic for Champions League, which involves the parking of buses, because I think that's his best opportunity to win games in Europe. So I think that's what he's trying to do. He's trying to play those games in the midweek to prepare himself for, or prepare the team rather, for those events. Like, he's in PSG is midweek this week, so that's what I think. That's what I suspect. I also maintain that he is currently trying to troll the top brass of Juventus because they fired him, or they mutually agreed to part ways, et cetera, et cetera. But I feel like they're still he's still trying to have a little fun. But I just think that there's more. Again, I think his emphasis is not on the league, and I think that's clear so far. But maybe I could be wrong. Maybe this is him trying to work through things, and maybe he's just bad at his job now. I don't know.
But that's the thing. It seems like he has no ideas, and that sabbatical was actually more destructive than helpful.
He had no ideas, though, even then. And that's what led to the change in manager, because it was all stale. It was almost like they were just pumping out, again, what we're seeing now. But, I mean, he won back then, I guess. It's an interesting dynamic because, again, you can't discount his success. But at the same time, you're seeing the results in the present not aligning with that, you know, understanding of what he was able to accomplish before. So either he's stale, or the team is still not understanding what he's trying to do. I'm not sure. I don't know what the answer is.
I think that's a perfect time to pass it over to the mister.
Yeah, Chris.
I mean, I don't want to go on too much longer with that. I think you guys kind of just said what needs to be said with that. It's stale. I agree. I think he, with Mike, I think he was running out of ideas during his last tenure. Fortunately for him, the league was weaker at that point. There was just less talent across the other, you know, top seven or eight clubs, and he could get away with these things. So it wasn't highlighted. His mistakes weren't highlighted like they are now. So, I don't see a drastic overhaul coming with his mentality, his philosophy. So it's probably going to be more of the same.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. Again, it'll be an interesting match midweek. But again, we'll talk through that when we get to it. That was the first game of Super Saturday. So let's move to the next game, which was probably one of the more important matches that you'll see this season. So we had Milan taking on Inter. So technically, Milan was the home team. Yep. in this game. So what happened in this game?
I'm more excited to talk about Paul this game.
Paul is clearing his throat already.
Mainly because the streak of Paulo coming up with an excuse every time Milan get a point.
Yeah.
It will continue this week.
Inevitably.
I think it will continue until the day Serie A ceases to exist. But as Mike said, Milan were the home team for this one. And Milan came out fairly strong the first, 15, 20 minutes specifically. And I think, Julian might even agree that kind of carried on throughout most of the first half. I found it interesting, and I liked that Pioli decided to apply a very high press when Inter were playing out from the back. And I think the explanation for it is simple, which is that with Lautaro and Correa being the two number nines, the chances of them knocking a ball down in the air against Tomori or Kalulu were, less likely than if Dzeko or Lukaku were up there. So it was a good decision. Obviously, it requires a lot of energy, but nonetheless, it was actually Inter who got the first goal through Brozovic. Kalulu and Tomori were across the pitch, way too big of a gap, but Brozovic exploited that gap, kind of made that run right down the middle and slotted it away. And then 28th minute, Rafael Leao with his first of two goals in the match, left-footed finish across the frame of the net. Like I said, that was his first of two goals. 54th minute, Giroud made it 2-1. And then I think it was the 61st or 62nd minute when those subs came in. Julie, do you have that info handy, or do you remember off the top of your head?
I will pull it up. But yeah, were...
No, Leao scored in the 60th. There. To make it 3-1.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, subs came. The Leao second goal, and then the subs came on. So, yeah, once those subs came on. 64th
minute.
64th, yeah. So, once those subs came on, again, it was 3-1 at this point. The game definitely changed in Inter's favor. I think having that target forward there with Dzeko definitely helped. It gave Inter that reference point. And then speaking of Dzeko, he scored in the 67th to make it 3-2. And then the last 20 minutes, there were definitely some quality chances from Inter to tie it, if not take the lead. Maignan did very well to keep a couple of good chances out, but it did finish 3-2 overall. Very exciting game. I didn't get to watch it live, but I did get to rewatch it in game. And again, I often talk about how I hope, non-Serie A fans, if they're going to watch any games, they're most likely watching these types of games. So I'm glad that it was an exciting match, and obviously the result was favorable for the red half of Milan.
Yeah, it's good to see the exciting parts of Serie A instead of like a 0-0 draw.
Yeah,
or any game with Juventus. So that's yeah, speaking of that third Milan goal, the Leao, his second goal, we marked that as our goal of this match day. So we already had Barella actually got the last one, right? So yep. Milan is well represented in the show. Do not tell me that they're not. And actually, I feel like maybe the fans know that. And now, Paulo, we need to represent Juve more favorably.
Well, is that fair? Or just shit on Milan. I mean,
there he is.
That's I could do that very easily.
Anyways, the Leao second goal is our goal of the match day. So here's that audio.
Giroud has found Rafael Leao, and still Rafael Leao! He has now reached superstar status on his 100th game in the Italian top flight. He has had a fixture to remember. Two goals and an assist. And Milan's main man.
Yeah, it was a nice goal. So he gets the ball from Giroud. He kind of, Paulo, what do we call it? He snakes it, or he like...
Elastico.
Nice. Elastico.
Yeah.
Does the elastico and just shimmies to his left, which catches, who's it, Julian Bastoni and...
Bastoni and De Vrij.
Both flat-footed. And he literally just walks by them, or I guess technically it was a run. So we'll call it a run, but it was effectively walking by them to go in front of the goal and kind of shoot it across into the net. So it was a very, very nice goal, and that it was a deserved goal of the match day. Now, Julian, you obviously have some notes here. Where do you want to start?
Mine are basically just going to be kind of giving Inter shit. I thought Milan were the better team. They 100% deserved the win more so than Inter. They kind of got their first goal against the run of play. I thought it was a great play by Lautaro to hold up the ball for as long as he did. But beyond that, I mean, the frustrating thing is all three goals were basically gifted to Milan. Like that first goal was Calhanoglu, horrible turnover. I think it was right to Tonali.
Yep.
Played Leao in, who then beat Handanovic. Handanovic again, like it was a nice shot by Leao. It's a hard shot into the corner, but Handanovic still gets a full hand onto the ball and can't keep it out. Second goal, same thing. You see Giroud, Bastoni has him, and then he just kind of peels off. Bastoni doesn't say anything to De Vrij, and Giroud's in acres of space. Again, I think Handanovic should do better on that one. He seemed, I don't know if you want to call it slow to react. I just think his movement isn't what it was anymore.
Yeah, I don't even know. I think that's just it. I don't know if it was slow to react. I think he just wasn't.
He's not quick.
He just wasn't able to do it properly because, like, he still made that type of movement. It's just that he sucks.
Yeah. And then the third goal, same thing. I watched that one again. And, yeah, Leao turned both Bastoni and De Vrij again. This one I'm blaming more on De Vrij because Bastoni, he's kind of giving him that side because he thinks, he knows De Vrij is behind him, and he thinks if Leao turns that way, then they'll box him out towards the sideline. But somehow De Vrij also gets caught flat-footed and
steps up almost too.
Yeah. And again, that one, Handanovic had no chance on that one. But it was just more, yeah, like something needs to be done with his defense. I think they've conceded 8 goals in 5 games, 3 against Lazio, 3 against Milan. And Zaghi's also, in my opinion, partially to blame as well. Going into half, Inter were lucky to have a 1-1 draw. And he needed to change something up at half. And again, similarly to Lazio, he waited too long. Even after Milan went up 2-1, I was watching the game with you guys and said, like, they need to make a change now before this gets worse. And sure enough, it got worse. So that I find he's slow to react on. He needs to start... I don't know. He needs to start just making the changes quicker. If something's not working, you got to go to your plan B. And then I think to change the defense, the first thing you got to do is just Onana needs to start. Handanovic isn't it anymore. He's not going to be the keeper like Meunier, who will make two, quite frankly, very good saves, one on the Lautaro header, one on the Çalhanoğlu shot, to keep that a 3-2 game, right? Handanovic, unless the ball's at him or in his kind of radius, he's not saving it. So I think that's the first change that needs to be made.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head here, though, that it was really Inter who lost this game as opposed to Milan who went out and, I mean, they deserved the win because they just had the better game, but it really was Inter shooting themselves in the foot for the most part. Like, Magic Mike had some great saves, which were great, were obviously saved the game because it ends 3-2. But outside of that, again, like those three goals, like you said, were literally kind of gifted to them. So
yeah, it was, you know, way too easy for way too easy.
Yeah, and but and yeah, if you give them those opportunities, they're obviously gonna, you know, they'll pounce on it.
Yeah, exactly. You know the form Leao's in. You know Giroud's a proven goal scorer. You give him any chance on goal, odds are he's gonna put it in the net. So
right, Paulo.
Okay, so I'm glad, Michael, you said that it was Inter who lost the game more than Milan winning the game here, and I'll explain why here. So I don't know if anyone recalls the bust up between Theo Hernandez and Dumfries early on in the game.
Which one, Paulo?
Well, the first one. So yes. It was early on in the game. Again, these two players know each other from last year. Theo Hernandez was sent off from a reckless challenge on Dumfries in the last Milan derby. So this continues again. It could have been like, what, 5 minutes in, Julian? Not even?
It was 9th minute, I think. They both got carded.
Yeah, so they both got carded. It was Theo Hernandez playing his theatric again, winning a foul, and then started to, push Dumfries for no reason. There's no reason to push him. And the ref, Keefe, came in and gave both players a yellow card. Now, why is this important, Julian? I'll explain. Later on in the game, when it was 3-2, okay, Dumfries had the ball on the right, was one-on-one with Theo Hernandez, knocked the ball past Theo Hernandez, and had acres of space behind the Milan player. Now, there is footage, okay?
Potato footage?
Potato? Yes. No, not potato footage.
Yes. Okay. If Paulo referenced it, it's shit footage.
Stai zitto. Now, there is, on that play, Theo Hernandez puts his left arm across Dumfries to block him off. Now, that is a foul any day of the week. Now, the problem here is that Keefe didn't call it, okay? Mm-hmm. If, and again, the video footage shows that it's a foul. It's a Theo Hernandez blocked off Dumfries, which is a foul. Chris, you cannot deny that. That is a foul. Now, because it was a promising attacking situation, because of all that space behind Theo Hernandez, that should have been, if it was called, should have been a second yellow card for the Milan player. Now, Milan goes down to 10, okay, and Inter, who are playing well, could have changed the game. That's why I agree with Michael, where that Inter lost this game more than Milan winning it. Okay,
hold on quickly here. I want to give Chris the opportunity to rebut. So, Chris, are you familiar? Did you watch enough of this this battle between Theo Hernandez and Dumfries to know what Paulo's talking about? Because I don't want to say it, but I kind of agree with Paulo.
I know what he's referring to. I'm just gonna bring up Paulo's line from 3 episodes ago, which is what, Paulo? It all evens out in the end.
No, but
that was your bullshit line you gave me when Atabor should have got a red, and then I'm gonna use your line. You just said it would have changed the outcome of the game, and that's what I tried to say, but you said it all evens out in the end. So,
no, but you have to admit that that should have been a foul and it should have been a second yellow card.
I could argue that Dumfries was hooking his arm in front of Teo Hernandez.
No, well, how does that not? No, because if Teo Hernandez didn't put his arm across Dumfries, then Dumfries wouldn't have been battling with Teo Hernandez in the first place.
So he's supposed to just. Dumfries also stuck his arm out
after Teo Hernandez blocked him off. What is Dumfries supposed to do? Allow him to get fouled, which happened anyway. But Keithy didn't call it because he was probably cognizant that if he did call it, he would have to send off Hernandez.
If Cuadrado did that to friggin' Sasha Lukic, would you be saying the same thing?
What does that have to do with anything? Stop changing the subject.
With it is that you're only making a big deal of it because it's a Milan player. That's what it has to do with it. Because
it's a Milan derby. That second yellow could have changed the game. And then that's not the only shitposting or shit behavior from any Milan player. right before Çalhanoğlu took that shot, okay, that made a great save from Mangiana and definitely saved the game for Milan. Tonali, instead of continuing to play the game, he started complaining that there was a second ball in the field. Okay, Chris, you can confirm as well that a couple years ago, after Dico Simeone did something to stop the play, they changed the rules that if the second ball is not blatantly affecting the run of the play, then play continues. What does Tonali do? Instead of throwing the ball outside of the field, Tonali throws the ball onto the field to try to stop play.
Yeah.
So you're telling me that is conducive to good sportsmanship in an important game like that? I mean, listen, this team.
Paulo, this isn't the Friendship Cup. They don't get spirit points at the end of the game
I'm explaining the pathetic and small behavior from this Milan team. Okay, it that shouldn't be rewarded. Now, and Tonali should have got a yellow card for that. I don't think he even did.
I wouldn't argue with you if he did, but to go back to your point, again, let's not act like this is the Friendship Cup. Like teams are always going
to
do.
I just want you to, and you said it. You admitted it, and I'm okay with that as long as you admit it.
But you also need to recognize that these are professional players in their most, probably the most intense match of the season they're going to play, unless they're playing in a cup final. They're going to do things like that. So you can't act like him doing, like, it's not like there was a breakaway and he grabbed the ball from the sidelines and smashed the ball that was in play away from the striker's feet. Like, it's part of things that they do at the highest level of the game. Would I encourage a 9-year-old to do that? No, of course not. But again, keep in mind what game we're talking about. Even if it was Lecce against Cremonese in match day 16, so be it. They're professionals.
Again, what I'm just saying, I'm pointing out that there's a lot of unsportsmanlike behavior in this game from the Milan side.
Sure.
Julian, yeah. Do you agree?
I mean, would it have been a soft second yellow? Yes, I think 100%. To me, ultimately, like, I don't get annoyed with that stuff because I don't, quite frankly, Inter didn't deserve to win the game. So I can't, like, they didn't play well enough to win the game. It ends with Inter. It doesn't matter, in my opinion, what Milan does.
Right. Control what you can control, basically.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah. As a neutral, I just think that I really had no skin in this game at all. Paulo obviously did. Paulo doesn't want Milan to win ever. But watching this game, I was able, I think, to be more of a neutral party here and really see what everyone's talking about. And I hate to say it again, but I think I agree with Paulo's case. I think both of those instances that Paul just described probably should have been yellows. And, you know, that's what's tough about, I guess, you know, Teo was on a yellow card very early. So, again, the ref is cognizant of whether or not he's going to give another card to change the landscape of the game going forward, the whole game. But he should be as well. So he shouldn't be doing those stupid things that he's doing. I called it early on. I said, I think this is going to be a game where Teo Hernandez gets sent off again. And he was lucky not to.
So my one complaint, yeah. Sorry, I just want to butt in.
Yeah.
I blame, again, Inter for this. They needed to attack them. They stopped using Dumfries after the 10th minute. And then it was just like, that was really the only other time they went down his wing.
Yeah, fair.
So that, in my opinion, is still Inter's fault. They needed to
change their game plan. And you're right. That's probably, again, that goes on Inzaghi, I think, is that probably you need to adjust your game plan to come out with the win. And again, to Chris's point, like, you do what you need to do to win those games. You know, you gamesmanship and everything is all well and nice up until the point of, again, you need to get this guy sent off because he's one of their best players. And it's that's just managing the game, you know, like that's literally doing what you can, however you need to get things done to win the game, Chris.
Even to Julian's point, though, with regards to using Dumfries more, I mean, you know, do you want to try and get him sent off? Sure. But I think, you know, the more you attack Teo's side, whether it's through Dumfries or Barella and overlaps, whatever the case is, that means, you know, ideally more defending he has to do. So, you know, the more energy he's putting out to defend properly, you know, ideally for Inter, that's less energy he has to go forward. So I think there are a couple benefits to trying to attack down his side regularly. You don't have to go out of your way to do it, but make sure that you're asking him to defend and put in that energy defensively to try and hopefully reduce his work rate going forward.
Especially if you have the option to push it to that side, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Okay. I have one more point on the ref. I think it was the ref took center stage in this game. I thought Keefe didn't have the personality and the confidence to ref this game. I think it was his first Milan derby. And to be honest with you, confirms to what the belief that I had before this game was that he's a very weak referee and fails to control the game and to manage the game properly.
Those things may be true. I'm not sure enough. I'm not into all the refereeing, the history of the refs necessarily. I don't agree with you saying that he took center stage in this game. I think that, again, what we've already discussed.
What are we talking about? Everything was on the field. About more,
but it's because you want. That's because you want to talk
about
it.
About the yellow card.
It's irrelevant because that's what you are bringing up. That's what you are talking about. I think most people have been talking about that Leao goal, and I think most people are saying.
I disagree.
Most people are saying. Three of the four people on this podcast are saying that Inter lost this game because Inter were crap, not because of refereeing decisions.
But listen, I watch the post match and the Italian punditry, and they're all talking about the Moviola, and Moviola was those situations that we discussed, that we just finished discussing.
But keep in mind, Paulo, they're always going to talk about that stuff.
Exactly.
Now, just a quick question for Julian. Who is the most at fault for, like, the Inter's current situation? Inzaghi, the club, or the players?
For me, it's the club. I don't think you can have a summer where there's so much uncertainty around who could potentially be sold. Like, right, how many players were listed as being sold? Like, you had Skriniar, Bastoni, Dumfries. I don't even know who else. I'm sure there are other names that were talked around. Gosens talked around on deadline day. DeMarco was talked around earlier on in the year. Like, you can't have that much uncertainty and then expect your team to be fully cohesive to start the season. Like, it's not going to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody's like, all the players' minds are going to be elsewhere, right? Because they, quite frankly, weren't sure who they were going to be playing with.
Okay. So what I find interesting about this, but your answer, Julian, was again, I was watching Italian punditry, and they had an open survey, social media survey, and the majority of Inter fans voted for the club and agreed with your assessment. And the punditry, which shows how out of touch they are, thought it was the manager or the players and not the club. They thought that the club had the best transfer market they possibly could, considering the financial situation.
So, considering that, yes, like, transfer window, now that it's closed, on paper looks fine, but you've literally had 2 months of uncertainty with what was going to happen with basically almost every single player. So I agree, and Inzaghi and the players do also take some of the blame, but most of the blame to me goes on the club, because they, like, everything starts kind of top down, right? You need that, like, everybody together top down. You can't just go through literally three quarters of your starting 11 and say, oh, this guy's for sale. Never mind, this guy's for sale. No, wait, we're going to sell this guy. And Inzaghi, I think he does need to be better. I think both Bastoni, De Vrij, Barella, they were all atrocious on Saturday. They all need to step up. But yeah, to me, it starts with the club.
Michael.
Yeah, I think we've exhausted the storylines in this game. But yeah, I think it's just important to note that, you know, Inter were missing Lukaku as well, which, you know is going to be more of a presence when healthy, right? So it's, you know, tough for Inter. I think that the score line almost flatters them a little bit. Again, it being 3-2, but again, it is what it is. That's just the reality of what happened here. So now Inter have lost two of the last three games. So
they've beaten the teams they're supposed to be, which is good, but losing to both Lazio and Milan is not good. And conceding three against both those teams is not good.
Yeah, right. Yeah, anytime you concede three, you're likely not going to win that game.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on here, the last game of Super Saturday, we had Lazio host Napoli in another great game, honestly. So Zaccagni scores very early in the 4th minute. Paul, do you want to go through this game in any length, or can I just run through the score?
Well, run through the score, then I'll talk about the episodes.
Okay. The Moviola. Okay, sure. So, Zaccagni scores in the 4th minute, so very early. But Napoli tied before the half with Min-jae Kim scoring in the 38th. And then Kavar in the 61st actually snatches the go-ahead goal. And it was a nice goal for sure. It was a potential goal of the match day. But in any case, it's still a winner for Napoli in this game. And they win 2-1.
So the headline from here, from this game, was that after the game, Sarri criticized the refs and stated that there is a plot against Lazio and as retribution for their complaining against refs in previous rounds. So I think it was on Monday, the FIGC opened up a inquiry against Sarri and those comments about the referees. And this was due to the fact that during the game, Lazzari made a run into the box and went 1v1 against Mario Rui, who, again, similar to what happened in the Milan game, Rui put his arm across Lazzari, looked like an elbow motion to Lazzari's neck, chin area. Mm-hmm. Lazzari went down and no call, not even VAR intervened, nothing. And again, the Moviola showed that it probably should have been a penalty, and Lazio were probably hard done by that decision. So again, I'll leave it up to the mister here. Was obviously Sarri wasn't right and probably shouldn't have said what he said about the referees, right?
In general, yes. I mean, I think there's a pretty fine line there, and often they get fined if they do come out and say anything. So yeah, I mean, probably should have reworded what he said.
Yeah, but by saying that there's a general plot against your club was probably a bit over the line. What would have been fair, what he should have said was that, listen, that was a penalty, mm-hmm. and you know, this should be looked at and explained why it wasn't called. But by saying that there's a general plot against you, I think that goes bit past the norm.
Yeah, that's fair to say. I even wonder if he said, like, do managers now get fined if they come out and say that the ref got that penalty call wrong, it should have been called or not? Or is that,
I mean,
generally accepted now?
We'll get into our next game, but there's other managers that that usually say that and mm-hmm. don't get fined. But here, it was a direct criticism and complaint of impropriety against a certain club.
Right.
Yeah, but I in this sense, I agree with the Moviola. I think it is a penalty.
Yeah, Michael, you've been agreeing with me.
Despite the, it's just incredible that Paulo's coming to the right conclusions the wrong way.
I actually thought, yeah, I agree. I thought this one was a PK more so than Teo's being a foul. This one was more like, yes, it's a foul.
Right. Yeah.
Arm gets up across the face. That's always called. Always.
Yeah. Yeah. Anywho. I think I agree that, you know, Lazio are kind of hard pressed by this game, but it is a loss. It is. And Napoli continue their good run of form to open up the season. Any further notes, Paul?
That's the notes that I have. Maybe Kvaratskhelia has scored his goals each in a different way as well. It hasn't been the same goal twice like Vlahovic and, you know, two free right. kicks. It's all different.
Right. Yeah, he's a great, definitely a great pickup. Okay, let's move on through the match day five here. So Sunday's games included Cremonese host to Sassuolo, and that game ends 0-0. Spezia host to Bologna, and that ends 2-2. Arnautovic brace canceled out by Bastoni, and they shout an own goal.
Just to touch on that, Arnautovic is now capo after 5 minutes.
As we all predicted.
As Man U predicted.
Ten Hag playing 3D chess. Yep.
Yeah, it's it. So that game ends 2-2. Verona host Sampdoria. So Sampdoria actually come out and score the first in the first half before an own goal by Odero ties it, and then Doig scores in the 45th as well. So it's all done after the first half, basically for Verona, and they win it 2-1. And now the last game that we're going to highlight, really go through here, is Udinese Roma Paulo.
This was an absolute, like, it started horribly for Roma. I think it was the first 2 minutes, ball comes into the box, a cross comes into the box. Karsdorp turns to chest towards Rui Patricio, but then you see Ndogi come up behind him and poke it past Rui Patricio. After that, it goes from, I think it was the second goal where it was a long-range shot, and that was failed, that Rui Patricio failed to parry it properly and goes into the net. Then Udinese add another two as Roma are trying to press to get back into the game. Now, the key points here. Number one, Gareth Southgate was in the stands watching Chris Smalling and Tammy Abraham. And then now it's now I'm going to get to the Moviola here. So Mourinho after the game said, I want to get Chris's thoughts on this as well. It's better to lose 4-0 than to lose 1-0.
I think just to polish, I think he said, or more of the full quote was, I would rather lose 4-0 once than lose 1-0 four times.
Okay.
To which, I mean, you need a lot more context. I guess I would agree, as I think he goes on to say, in this case, I lose one match instead of losing four matches. So I guess just purely from a mathematical standpoint, yes, I would rather lose the one game 4-0 instead of four games 1-0. I think this is just Mourinho trying to offer everybody a soundbite like he did for people to talk about instead of talking about how poor Roma were.
So supposedly that's an old quote from the late 80s, early 90s from Boskov, who used to coach Sampdoria to those during their
heyday
with Gianluca Vialli and Roberto Mancini as their strikers. Now, so after that quote, there's another soundbite where the ref was perfect for Udinese. Now, the reason he goes on to qualify that with the fact that the first yellow card of the game was given to Dybala, which that yellow card, if you look at the Moviola as well, was iffy at best. And Julian, guess who was the referee?
It was Maresca, wasn't it?
Yes. Sempre tu. Sempre tu, Maresca. Sempre tu.
I thought you were going to say it was Di Brutto.
So he was a referee. And then there was a PK shout at 2-0. Celik, again, gets into the box. It's Bacau, who comes in from behind, like the angle was behind, and drops his shoulder to take out Celik. And there was no VAR, no nothing. Nothing was called. Play goes on. And, Mourinho was complaining because the fact that if that penalty was called, Roma could get back into the game and it changes the whole momentum of the game. But he goes on to say that it was the sum of the individual errors become a team, and his errors as well. Chris?
I read most of the interview. I wasn't able to listen to it. Like I said, I think it's classic Mourinho, lost badly, and he's just trying to point the finger, you know, in a couple of different ways. But at the end of the day, it can just be summarized as Roma weren't good enough. Udinese were the better team, and I don't want to say he needs to revisit his player selection, but something needs to to change. But I guess the one thing I do want to five games now, Abraham only has the one goal, correct?
Yes, again, but well, it was an important one against Juventus. But yes,
yes, and again, I don't think goals always need to be the main focus of a striker, because you could say, you know, is he creating assists and is he getting into good chances? But from what
which
I've
he
seen,
did with in midweek against Monza, he's set up to the two Dybala goals.
Okay, so there we go. I was just gonna say from what I saw in this game in particular, I didn't see too much from Tammy, but I don't want to just pick one game and say, you know, he's off to a bad start. I know in previous games he was pivotal as well. So and just one other part, you mentioned Southgate being there.
Yeah.
For sure, he was looking at Abraham. I'm willing to bet he didn't glance one eye over at Smalling. I think the center-back depth in England is advanced to the point where Smalling doesn't need to be considered. I might be wrong. That's just my guess right now.
So I was reading up on that because I thought it was interesting. And I think after seeing Abraham, Southgate comes, Abraham injures his shoulder and has a bad game. I mean, that's just, you can call it coincidence, but I think it's bad voodoo on part of Southgate, which he always had bad voodoo. Anyway. Yeah.
No, I was going to say the same thing. I think that's absolutely okay, the
okay,
right.
What is happening in this episode? Michael's agreeing with
I don't know, Paulo. I don't know what it is. Again, it's confounding because, again, it's you're putting the wrong formula in. And it's still, and I'm still there with you.
Yeah. But
am I wrong? No, it's the children.
So just to finish up my point, it was that I think it was Corriere dello Sport was saying that that he probably won't consider Abraham as Harry Kane's backup, but is still thinking about Chris Smalling back into the fold.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe so he was just being nice.
So he as well is coming to the wrong conclusion with different formulas as well, is what you're telling me.
I guess so.
That's right.
So
okay, let's move on here and finish out the match days before we take a break. But that was all on the Sunday. Now we had Monday's game. So Monza hosts to Atlanta. And Atlanta actually win this game 2-0. Holland in the 57th and a Marlon own goal give Atlanta the win and the lead in Serie A so far after five games. But nonetheless, they have had an improved, run of form in the league compared to last year. Moving on to Salernitana, who hosted Empoli, and that game ends 2-2. Satriano on the 31st, Mazzocchi in the 39th, made it 1-1 at half before Dia and Lammers also score in the second half to run it out to a 2-2 draw. And the final game was Torino host to Lecce. And Vlachis scores the only goal in the 40th, and that's a 1-0 goal, 1-0 win rather for Torino over Lecce in that game. There we go. That's it.
Okay, so just final points. I think it requires an addition of a sack race because there's talk of Mihailovic being at risk. Bologna only has 3 points in five games. Listen, my personal opinion is that he should be given more time. He has gotten points against the teams that he should have. Has lost. I guess the bad loss was against Milan. And then, I mean, he also in the transfer market lost Svanberg, Hickey, and Diate. So again, it's probably natural that Bologna are struggling for form right now. Chris, your thoughts? And there's another sack race entry.
Yeah, I mean, going winless is difficult. It's, you know, five games into the season, I get your argument about getting points against certain teams, but I guess I would just kind of go back even, you know, beyond this season. And I know he's obviously dealt with, you know, the nastiest of diseases. So I, you know, I can't imagine, you know, trying to manage a Serie A club and then deal with his health situation. But, yeah, I just don't know if Bologna have really played to their potential, even, you know, prior. Also, I still think he deserves a couple more games to see if they can get on a run of sorts. But I can see, you know, if things don't turn around by match day 12 or 13, that, you know, somebody else is in there.
And that other person is also De Zerbi, is one of them, one of the names that are being thrown about. I think there was another one that I saw. I think it was Paulo Sousa, which I think would be absolutely disastrous. But then, so the next one on the list for the sack race is Giovanni Stroppa. There was confirmed reports that Massimo Odo and Brocchi were at the stadium versus Atalanta. I mean, the problem with watching, because I watched a few Monza games already this season, and yeah, they attack well. They have good ideas going forward, but then it's not sustainable because it's just like a full press and then there's no shape going back and they're absolutely exposed on the defensive side. And then Monza in week six, they play Lecce. And then after Juventus in week seven, it's Sampdoria, Spezia, and Empoli all in a row. And then, so my question to everyone, do you sack them if they lose against Lecce?
Michael.
Maybe. I sack them if you lose against Juventus, to be honest. they've only scored two goals in, what is it, five matches now. So I think that's, yeah. They need new ideas, I think. So, yes.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's enough. If you look at that squad, there's enough talent where they should be doing better than they are. Yeah. Like, if you look at their squad compared to Lecce or even Empoli or Spezia, like, I think player for player, they have a better squad. And they have literally no results. So.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I'll go back just to what I said, you know, when we were previewing this season. Just that anytime you bring in so many new players to a squad, it is going to take time, you know, whether it's superstars or, you know, players that Munza brought in. So I think it's a bit of a combination of the both here, where the manager needs to make some changes, but in general, people need to give these players time to gel. I always use the QPR example from the English league. I want to say maybe 10 years ago, give or take, where they brought in, it feels like a dozen new players when they got promoted and just could never gel and were sent right back down, despite having arguably more talent than the teams that did stay up. So I think player chemistry is definitely valuable. So something to remember about.
Michael.
Paul, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I think that he should be sacked. If Monza don't pick up a result against Lecce, at least a point at a minimum, I think he should be sacked. Because do you run the risk losing, let's be honest, or let's be kind of realistic, losing against Juventus and then having three games against direct relegation opponents and blowing all those three games? That's 9 points right there that you drop early on in the season against especially opponents.
And again, like you said, especially if it's losses, right? Especially if it's giving them the advantage of having those 3 points over you.
Yeah,
agreed.
Yeah,
yeah, interesting times. We'll see what was on the horizon for Monza. What is on the horizon for us, however, is a break. So why don't we take that break? And then when we come back, we'll go through what's ahead for the Italian sides in the European competition. So we'll take a break and we'll be right back. Back to the podcast. We of course had to play a song about being friend zoned, Paulo. I think that's what it's about. Anywho,
again, this song was, I guess, what, invented before being friend zoned was even a term in popular parlance?
I don't know. No, I think it was probably, no, I think being friend zoned has been a thing for a while. Since the Middle Ages. goodness gracious. Okay. Let's try and get this through this as quick as possible. We have obviously quite a few things to get through here, though. So we'll start off with obviously the bigger of the European tournaments, and that would be the Champions League, and that kicks off again on Tuesday.
Yeah, and the best game on the list is PSG Juventus, and this is what I wanted to talk about, Michael, here, and starting with this. So after the game against Fiorentina, Allegri comes out and says that the only game that counts in the Champions League group stage is Benfica at home.
Right.
So if that's the case, then why did Moretti and Vlahovic didn't play against Fiorentina? And again, it goes to what I started into the last segment about, it's about a bigger debate about Juventus' objective and their quote-unquote DNA about, you know, winning is the only thing that counts, and fino alla fine, et cetera.
But do you not want them to play on like against PSG, the marquee game, even though he's saying Benfica's the more important games, et cetera, et cetera. They're obviously going to play those games, but do you not want to put your best forward for PSG?
Well, but again, if that's the problem, if that's what you think is, if it's not an important game, then why rest them and against Fiorentina, and then you drop and you drop points against your presumed rival?
Yeah.
Or why even say it that way? Why say?
But that's the reality, because he's telling the truth. That's literally what it is. He's not wrong. Obviously, in that group, those are the most important games, because again, that'll decide whether or not, you know, that second position is really what they're gunning for. They're probably not going to get that first position or PSG. So those games are going to be the most important matches to get results from, because you need to not give up 6 points, basically. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get exactly what you're saying, but there's a better way to say that.
Sure.
I think Bonucci tried to fix it, saying that Allegri said it that way was to try to break the tension and to try to ease expectations, etc.
Going into it, yeah, which is fair. I mean, last year they surprised everybody and came out first in that group.
But that's the point. Then, like, there's a different way to say it. Saying, okay, PSGs are obviously favorites, but we're going to go into that game and we're going to play our game and we're going to try to come out with the result because, okay,
but
you know. What I'm saying? Like,
sure, but those are all just words. It's all, you know, it's all platitudes. It's just niceties, you know.
I get that, but that's important in the fact in it's better communication skills. You know what I'm saying? Is that you should just say what people want to hear so they don't get spooked.
Maybe, but in any case, we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
it's a big game to start it off, and it'll be fun. It'll be fun.
Romp. Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Speaking about the game, Michael, suppose it could be a 3-5-2.
And they're in Paris, right?
Yes, they're in Paris. Yes. And with a back three of Bonucci, Bremer, and Danilo, of course, Perina's goalkeeper. The midfield five is Kostic, Rabiot, Paredes, Miretti, and Cuadrado, and going with the two strikers, Vlahovic and the milkman, Akardis Milik. So again, I think that's the best possible lineup that they can put out, all things considering, due to injuries and etc. And speaking about injuries, Michael, Pogba had to go under the knife, what he was trying to avoid, and just pissed away 1 month of his time. And also another topic that came about from the pre-match interviews was Pogba's relationship with Mbappe.
Okay, and what was that?
Well, I don't know if you recall.
That's bad. That he hired a witch doctor to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you hired a witch doctor. Yeah.
Yes.
What they call it in Italian, Macumba.
I don't know.
Or I think
I think it's a player, Macumba.
Yeah. I think that's the French word or the French term. Anyway, in Italian, it's Malocchio. So,
yeah. Okay. So the only other game on Tuesday's set of games for Champions League is Milan Salzburg. Well, not the only other game. The other Italian team playing is Milan, who's taking on Salzburg. So, Chris, just quickly, how important is this match? And do you see any trouble for Milan coming off the derby?
I mean, I think it's important. I see Salzburg as, you know, probably the third best team in the group. So, and of course, it being the first game in the group, you want to get off to a good start. But something I was talking to a friend about over the weekend was just, and you know, this goes for Inter as well, is, you know, because there was, you know, the derby match leading up the Champions League, you know, Pioli couldn't really rotate the squad. He had to go and put out, you know, a strong 11 and some strong substitutions. So I'll be curious to see, what kind of 11 does he put out? Does he put out a similar 11 to the Inter game, or does he rotate the squad a little bit in this midweek Champions League match? Again, difficult decisions that managers have to take, and it tests the squad depth early on in the season. So,
right.
Yeah. Looking forward to that anyways.
So I think they actually got lucky, I think, with the way that this draw worked out, you know, being when it is, because Inter, on the other hand, on Wednesday, have one of their tougher matches. I mean, it's all tough, I guess, in their group anyways, but Inter take Inter take on Bayern, right, on Wednesday?
Yeah, so the good news with Allen is at least they're home for that game, so they...
No travel.
Yeah, no travel, but even still, like, it's... They'll have their fans supporting them at least for this one. I have a weird feeling it's going to go one of two ways. They're either going to get completely blown out, or they're somehow going to scrape by with a win.
Right. Yeah. It'll be fun.
I shouldn't say win. I'm going to say a result. but we'll see again. I don't know what to expect. I feel like Bayern is going to win this one. Hopefully, if Handanovic is in the net, they get shelled enough where he never
returns again. Yeah.
Actually, that's perfect because that leads into my question I want to ask Julian. Do you start Onana in this game?
No.
Okay.
Too much. You're like throwing him to the wolves if you do that. Like, I feel like that's a cowardly move by Inzaghi. If you know you need to do a keeper change, but I think throwing him in a game where you're quite frankly expected to lose is a bit of a cowardly move.
And then, Chris, I saw this question today. Are Milan a part of the top eight teams in the Champions League?
Top eight?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. No. Perfect.
Perfect. Just quickly, Mike, just to go back to what you were saying about kind of how Milan got a favorable draw with the schedule. Mm-hmm. Yes and no. So about a month from now, so starting October 5th, between October 5th and October 11th, mm-hmm. Milan have three games: Chelsea, Juve, Chelsea.
Wait,
yeah.
So it's easier right now, but to start, it's going to catch up with them eventually. Yeah.
I mean, the Juve game is an easy 3 points.
Not with Allegri at the helm.
Terrorista ball. Yeah, fair enough.
Sorry, go ahead, Paulo or Mike, whoever cut someone off there.
Yeah, no, Paulo, did you have anything else for Inter? I was going to move on to Napoli.
Not really, no. For Inter, Julian pretty much covered it.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Forza Davies.
The clock's ticking, right, Michael?
Yes. Are you talking about the clock to get to see De Ligt in Milan playing striker for Bayern against Inter? So that's what's going to happen this week.
Or is he going to get another handball PK?
Maybe.
win 1-0 on a De Ligt handball.
That'd be actually hilarious, man. The amount of memes that come from that. Anyway, moving on. I think, honestly, I think out of all four games, I think Napoli, Liverpool could be the most intriguing because Napoli, as of Monday, don't have any injuries or any debates about who's going to start. It looked like it's pretty straightforward from the Napoli point of view. But on the Liverpool side, I know, Chris, you've been following the PL closer than all of us, and it seems that Liverpool have been struggling to stay consistent. And it seems for that reason is that they Klopp has five players out injured, and there are some doubts on some of the players that are to be included in a starting 11. So it was probably the best time for Napoli to play Liverpool. To play Liverpool, which is probably the hardest team that they can that they have to face in this group.
Yeah, that's fair to say. I would just add, I mean, while it is probably a good time to play Liverpool, as with most of the top English teams, they've got feels like an unlimited transfer budget, which I know obviously isn't the case, but they've got deeper squads than all of the Serie A clubs, so you know, even if they do have 3, 4, 5 injuries, they've got guys coming off the bench that are still, you know, top level players. So again, I agree with what you said, but I also still think it will be a difficult match for Napoli.
So just to wrap it up, Michael, something hilarious that I think will make you laugh. Di Lorenzo, which is Napoli's captain, asked Spalletti not to go into retiro before the game.
Why?
Well, because
there was rumors they were going to.
Yeah, but probably after the result against Lecce, I think DiLorenzo talked with Spalletti not to go into Retiro after that game before the Lazio game, and is that the same? And it worked. And DiLorenzo asked Spalletti
same thing.
The same thing. And then I kind of lied about having Napoli not having any injuries. I think Osimhen's a doubt, but it seems that he'll be fit enough to make it.
Okay. Yeah. So that'll be interesting to watch on what is it, Wednesday?
Wednesday. Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to Europa League on Thursday. So what do we have in there?
Give me one second here. So, of course, it is Lazio and Roma. Roma traveling to Ludogorets, and that would be well, of course, all the games are on Thursday. Roma traveling to Ludogorets. And then Lazio hosting Feyenoord. I believe we spoke about this matchup a little bit last week, just to the animosity that we'll be expecting between the Lazio and Roma supporters with Feyenoord coming here. Last time Feyenoord supporters were in Rome, it was to face Roma. And Paulo, can you just remind us what took place there?
So the Feyenoord fans trashed the Trevi Fountain.
Right. So, of course, both Roma and Lazio supporters kind of have a bone to pick with the Feyenoord supporters. So I'm sure in full force. And I'll be looking onto Twitter pre-match to see what's going on.
How many fires?
Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. I think they were banned to travel there, but that doesn't mean that they won't travel there.
Well, I can see how they'd be banned from going to the match, but I'm sure they can still get into the city.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah. And light fires.
Yeah, and light fires, exactly. But for Roma, sorry. You would hope it should be straightforward. I'm not predicting a big win, but they should be coming with the 3 points. But for Lazio, Feyenoord, certainly the most difficult match they have in their group here. So coming off to a good start, and hopefully 3 points will kind of set them on their way. Again, as we know, if you don't win your Europa League group, it becomes much more difficult to advance. So this would be a big matchup for Lazio.
So just to supplement that, essentially Lazio will probably change their entire starting 11. Maximiano is supposed to come in. Cazale and Gila are supposed to start at center back. Basic, or Basic as I like to call him. Marcos Alonso and Ficino in midfield, and that Cancellieri was supposed to start at striker. And some Roma news is that Belotti will probably start after Tammy's shoulder injury.
Interesting. Okay, let's go to the greatest competition on earth, where there's currently an Italian champion. And that, of course, is Conference League.
So we have Fiorentina taking on, I'm not sure, Riga SFS, a Latvian team. Paolo was just telling us a little bit about it. It's their first ever European competition, so kudos to them. The game is in Florence, so I'm expecting a little bit of rotation, but I feel like this should be a fairly easy win for Fiorentina.
You'd hope. Okay, that's it for our European preview. It'll be a good week, and then of course we also have. Let me just pull up the match day six preview that I had here. So on what is it, the 10th? I guess is a Saturday. We have the Napoli, Inter, and Milan all play on Saturday, and then Juve plays Sunday. Is there also Champions League next week? Is that why?
Yeah. Inter, I know they play on Tuesday as well, right after.
Right, that's why.
Back to back. Yeah,
makes sense.
They're trying to get, I think, the group stages done by the World Cup, I believe.
Right, okay. Okay. Paulo, any notes beyond what we've already discussed here? And if you have, do you have a Serie B minute?
I do.
So do you want to do that first? And then do you close out with some special notes?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Okay. So quickly, Serie B minutes. Calgary beat Modena 1-0. Frosinone 2-1. 2-0 winners over Como. Benevento beat Venezia 2-0. So we'll wait, 9 days before those highlights come out?
Yes.
3-0. Speaking of highlights, yeah. Sorry, just actually finish your minute. I'll say it after.
Okay. 3-0 Regina win over Palermo. Bari tied Spal 2-2. 3-3 draw between Genoa Parma. Sutriol got their first ever win in Serie B, 2-1 over Pisa. Next round of games are Palermo Genoa on Friday, Cosenza Bari, Modena Brescia, Parma Terana, Benevento Cagliari, and Spal Venezia. Those are my picks for the round. Regina, Frosinone, Brescia all tied at 9 points. Special Pescara moment. Pescara beat Avellino in their first league game of the season, 1-0.
Surprised, Paulo and Julian interrupted you there that you didn't say reclaiming my time so you can have it added back to your 1 minute. Julian.
Yeah, so I just wanted to add that I found over the weekend when I was bored looking for Serie B highlights, there actually is a Lega B YouTube channel. I don't know if it's the official one, but they do post the highlights fairly quick. Like literally day of. So they had match day 3 and 4 up. There was nothing for match day 1 and 2. But I was able to see a couple Interlonis score. So that was nice.
So now what's confounding is that what is Venezia saying that they don't have? They don't have.
They're not allowed to post it.
Okay. So I think, I think they want the league to post.
Got it. I think I may have said this last week, but Venezia have a temporary way around that. They're posting highlight videos in black and white and calling it like a vintage film, like way back on Wednesday.
Right.
They post on Friday and they're putting it in black and white and pixelated and all that. So that's their clever way of
trying to get around the AI or anything.
Exactly. We'll see how long it lasts.
Yeah.
And
they're off.
Yeah. The band.
Who's Hermes already got contact with him.
No, yeah, Hermes. Yeah. I think it's not Hermes because he's Syria.
Yes.
Yeah. So
he's a serious ass.
Yeah. Okay, so quickly, special notes. The transfer market's done. I guess thank God for the sake that it's like last like 2 months. Okay, so the two teams that I think had a great transfer market, one big, one small. The big team is Napoli. I think when we did our rankings, which was about 2 weeks before the window closes, we all had Napoli struggling because they didn't properly replace Koulibaly, Ruiz, Insigne, Ospina, and Mertens. But then they came out of nowhere and signed Raspadori, Simeone, and Kim.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Napoli, for me, had the best transfer market out of the big teams. Out of the small teams, I think it's Salernitana. And I know it's probably easy because of the fact that they had a good start, but if you look at the players that they brought in, Lovato, again, they brought back Bonazzoli, Maggiore, Dia, who's scoring goals, Piontek, Mazzocchi, who had a good season with Venezia, even though they got relegated, Kondreva, even though Julian hates him, and they got rid of Gagliolo, and I know Julian hates him as well.
Yeah, he was very bad.
Yeah, and Perotti, who wasn't that great as well, and then sold Ederson to Atalanta, which essentially funded their whole transfer market.
There you go.
Yeah. And also, Michael, guess who's the sporting director for Salernitana?
Who?
Isn't it DeSantis?
It's Kondreva. Exactly. It's Kondreva.
No, it's the same. It's the Oracle from Guadalajara.
That's right.
Yeah.
It's Oracle. It's funny that you know those notes also kind of led me to look at the table again. Just again, it's 5 games. It's not like a great sample size, obviously, but
remember, 10 games, Mike.
Yeah, 10 games. So another 5 games, and we'll see. But Atalanta with 13 points is a surprise for me. They've won 1-4, drawn 1.
So about that, that's a surprise for you, and it's also a surprise to history because it's the first time that Atalanta has led at any point in the season on top of the Serie A table.
Bravo.
First time in history.
Wow. That's kind of unbelievable.
I mean, it makes sense. They don't have Europe, and they took off points off of the reigning champions. So.
Right. There you have it again, 13 points. Napoli and Milan are tied at 11 at this point, but again, we'll see where we go from here. It's obviously still quite close because, again, there's what, 4 points separating Inter in eighth and Atlanta in first. So it's, you know, actually four points. Yeah, they're at 9 points. So.
Inter and Juve.
I very carefully chose who I was mentioning, and that was that was Inter in eighth place. goodness. Okay. Any final notes? Anybody?
CanCon. CanCon. I'll do the sure. CanCon this week. Toronto TFC blew a 2-0 lead on Sunday.
Haram.
And lost 4-3 against Montreal.
Haram.
I'll add to it. I know Theo Corbiano. I can't remember which championship side he's on loan at right now, and I believe Wolves still own him, but he scored this past weekend, and he's still on the radar for John Herdman's World Cup squad. So he scored, and then Julian was mentioning over the weekend that Ike Ugbo, he's playing in Ligue 1 for, I believe it's pronounced Troyes, T-R-O-Y-E-S. Hopefully I didn't butcher that too bad. He also scored as well. And I believe it was a win for his club. So good to see Canadians doing well abroad.
And Blackpool. I just looked up Blackpool.
That's where he's on loan at, Corbiano?
Yeah.
Okay. And it is a loan, right?
Or it is. He plays on loan, yeah. From Wolves.
From Wolves. Okay. Thanks.
Oh, and there was the one Inter actually signed a guy born in Toronto.
Right.
From
Like
a Serie D side.
Played for Richmond Hill.
Forget the guy's name, but.
I think it was Umar Diallo. That name just
it sounds actually
rings a bell in my head, but I've got a lot of useless information in my head, so I could be way off with that.
Diallo, for some reason, yeah. Diallo, Canada. Let's see what happens.
Oh, there was also, now we got the ball rolling. Montreal, I was about to say Montreal Impact.
Club de Foot Montreal.
Yeah. They last week sold a young striker, I believe his name is Ishmael Kone, to Sheffield United. So I got another young Canadian player moving abroad. I hope he gets playing time. I know Sheffield are in the championship this year, I believe. So that's always my worry when they go abroad is, are they going to play? Similar situation, not that he was super young, but Richie Larea went to, I believe, Nottingham last year, and he's now back at TFC because he unfortunately wasn't getting the playing time he wanted. So, good positive move. Just hope he gets on the pitch.
Yeah, 17-year-old Canadian forward Umar Diallo has moved to Inter Milan's U18 from City D side, Canara. There you go.
Brav
indeed.
So are you saying that Canadian players should go play in Serie D?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why?
Well, I'm just saying. I mean, that's another pathway that that they can get into Serie A.
Yes, right. Through Allegri's college.
Yeah. Lega B University.
Yeah, well, Lega B is the university. They got to go to college first. And then...
Right. All right.
The practical experience.
Or it's community college and then college. because community college will be the dilettante, and then college will be like a pro, then university, like it'd be university. So it'd be like going to like Queens, if you use a Canadian example.
You've held me back long enough. I'm going to Clown College.
Is that arts and culture
part? We're back. It's full circle.
Yeah. Okay.
You people have seen my way long. Anyways, okay, great. Good show. If that's it for our notes, then I just want to say make sure you are following us on our social channels, so at RTW Calcio on both Instagram and Twitter. Yeah, what do we just said Paulo was going to post a thing, so maybe we'll post something, or Paulo wanted to discuss it more. Maybe we'll talk about what he talked about. It was about like the Napoli thing you were saying.
Yeah,
like,
who had the best transfer?
Well, maybe we'll throw that onto a poll as well. Yeah, things like that. Again, you know, the occasional giveaway is also on there. So again, feel free to follow us on there to make sure we're on topic, chatting through City Ass stuff. We also like to, I guess, goad people into thinking that we... What did Chris do when people got mad at him? He said the City Ass manager or something, and people were mad and they were... What do we call that? What are we doing there?
Maybe. Trolling? Having fun.
I guess let's call it trolling. Yeah, okay, we're having fun. We like to have fun on those platforms.
Well, there is one guy in the replies pretty much like found or like exposed Chris about engagement, getting engagements, engaging with the posts, which right. I find hilarious.
It was a good list.
I mean,
it's stands proven, by it.
It's proving correct now. I mean, Inzaghi was pretty much like, you know, exposed as well, to use another term.
Yeah, by Pioli, who's not on that list.
Allegri, rightfully not on the list. Pioli can maybe work himself onto the list.
If he's nice.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's it, guys. Let's call the show then. We'll be back, obviously, after this jam-packed week full of Calcio. So we'll make sure that we keep our notes. Paulo will be in charge of, I guess, making sure that we all eat, because on the weekend we had a nice carbonara that he made for Super Saturday. So actually, Chris wasn't there, though. Chris didn't get to enjoy it. So good. Actually, no. Did you know Rosario made it? Actually, you bought the pancetta.
It's actually guanciale, but yes,
guanciale, even better.
Yeah.
Anyways, you'll. What I'm saying is, you're also doing that for us this week. Should I leave work early and come watch the games?
Yeah. I mean, do you work Saturdays? I don't think you work Saturdays.
No, but for Champions League.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Come over the for game time. Yeah.
Brav. That's how you do it, guys. That's how you get a free lunch.
Yeah. Well, it's actually a three. It would be kind of a liner.
Oh. Ooh. Okay. We'll see about that. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll see you all next week after, again, we've had some fun Calcio. So talk to you then. All right. Ciao. Bye.